The Adventures of Indiana Jim, number 18, for February 21st, 2009.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the Cliffs of Insanity,
a man who needs no introduction, that international man of geekery, that intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
You, boy, are arrogant, hot-tempered, and entirely too bold.
I like that. Reminds me of me.
I don't believe I haven't seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I have entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Indiana Jim, Indiana Jim. This is London calling. Come in, please.
Well, happy Saturday and welcome to adventure number 18. This will feature the second half of my interview with Scott Sigler. I hope you enjoyed first half. If you have not heard it, it's not important that you hear the first half first, but it sort of has a better flow that way, I think. But anyway, we almost had a severe tragedy on our hands today. We had a hamster loose in the house. That was fun. So anyway, we ended up finding the hamster, so everything's cool with the hamster now. So, no worries. Actually, this is not the first time we've had a hamster escape from a cage. As a matter of fact, what we've got is one of those, we've got three hamsters. One aquarium cage and two of those plastic, colorful cages, you know, where you got like little tubes that can go together and you can make like this massive hamster environment, which we don't do, but that's a possibility. Anyway, one hamster, there's this little tube that goes straight up and there's a little bubble thing that he sits in. This hamster, Forrest is his name, was able to pop open the lid and escape. The thing is, though, this was a different hamster. This was Candy. Forrest wasn't smart enough to do this yet, but Candy did it. And we'd wake up to the cat playing with something in the room. And then we'd find this hamster scurrying in our bedroom, and our bedroom is upstairs. So this hamster would have had to get out of the cage, walked across the kitchen floor, gone through the living room, up the stairs, down the hall, into our bedroom. Twice. So, we finally figured out how she was escaping and switched cages. Forrest, on the other hand, loves human contact. And whenever he sees a person walking by the cage, he runs to his door. And started to climb on the door. And proceeded to make the door fall open. So we have twist ties on the door, tape on the bubble thing, and this hamster is named Crazy. And the cage has two like holes on one side. On the top, one's for the water and one's just an empty hole for you could attach more tubes for more cages. And it has a little plastic thing that just sitting in there, and apparently he climbed up the walls of the cage, popped that off, and escaped, and we couldn't find him. And then after a while, he just kind of showed up. And so I figured out how to take the little thing and twist it in there so it doesn't pop out. So anyway, that was the adventure for today. Mrs. Indy and I have been watching Chuck lately, and it's pretty funny show. We basically borrowed the first season DVDs from a friend of hers, and we always thought it would be stupid. And I especially always thought it would be stupid because just the marketing campaign is ridiculous. They make it look more like Scrubs, and it's really less like Scrubs, and it's kind of more like Monk. It actually has some sort of some serious elements to it, but also funny elements. It's kind of comedy amidst the serious. It's not like a total spoof fest. So I was very happy to see that. And this is coming from the guy who likes Mel Brooks, you know, but I don't like an entire TV series like that. I don't really like Scrubs. It's funny at times, but I can't watch a whole show of it. You know, there's too much of the sound effects and the weird, you know, comic angles, and I don't know how to really describe it, but there's enough of Scrubs that takes me out of the actual story, where in Chuck, it could actually be not the whole memorizing the secrets of the CIA thing, but the, you know, if you have somebody whose cover is working at a Buy More or a Best Buy in the nerd herd, I mean the Geek Squad. And it really is a funny show. So if you have not checked Chuck out, you really should. It is really intelligent humor. It has Adam Baldwin, who of course we all remember as Jane from Firefly. So he's funny in that. He plays an NSA agent. And, you know, you're really rooting for Chuck to get the girl for real, even though it's only his cover girlfriend. I'm not into season 2 yet, so don't spoil anything for me, but there's that. I've been really busy lately working on the 49ers fan cast. Yes, I tried the Fanboy Sports Cast once, where it was football, baseball, and basketball 100% hockey free, and I found that the only thing that interested me was football. The baseball discussion just bored me to tears. And then whenever we really talked about football, the only thing that really interested me was the 49ers. So, you know, when you're a podcaster, you got to look for your niche. And the thing about 49ers podcasts is there's one official podcast. Basically, every time a player or coach appears on the local radio station, that comes out as an episode, the interview. And then there's the San Francisco Chronicle podcast, which, you know, had episodes going for a while, but then just sort of stopped. And I guess they'll pick it up during the next season, but now I have a crying kid, and I'm going to pause to check it out. And thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. When she walks, she's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently, that when she passes, each one she passes goes. And basically, any search you run in iTunes for 49ers podcasts, you don't really come up with any results. I mean, you come up with results, but there's hardly anything there. I guess I was saying that the Chronicle podcast, they didn't do much this last season. Hopefully, they'll get on a more regular schedule. And basically, the beat writer talks to the sports editor about whatever the latest stories are. Anyway, that's not the point. The most regular fan podcast, hello, son, is the 49ers Paradise podcast, which their last episode was in November of 2008. But everything else hasn't had a podcast in a year or 2 years, or they only had 3 episodes or whatever. So I saw a chance to make a regular podcast, a weekly podcast, and also really make a good quality production, because a lot of them, the production values were low. I know that's yours. I know that's your Webkinz code for your dragon, but it's going to stay right here on my desk until we get it on Webkinz. So, that's my goal with it. So if you go to 49ersfancast.com, you'll find it. Find it there. I know my official show observer, who's also a 49ers fan, says he enjoyed it. So I know he's listening. I've made a couple announcements on message boards for 49ers fans, so we'll see how it goes. But if you have a chance, please go check it out, because if you visit the site, it helps the Google Analytics, so it'll show up in the searches more often. So please let me unleash my minions to visit 49ersfancast.com. You don't have to read anything, just click the blog posts, go through there and add some clicks, you know. So that's all I'm saying. Anyway, enough blather. let's take a break for a couple messages, and then when we come back, we're going to have the second half of my interview with the amazing, the lovely Scott Sigler.
Alliance between two kingdoms is struggling. The only person with the knowledge necessary to restore harmony between the two has been murdered. Now, seven heroes must travel to the underworld to talk to that person and retrieve that lost knowledge. But on the way, they'll face magical dangers.
Cutting damage doesn't affect them.
That's the only kind of weapon we have.
And encounter all sorts of supernatural beings.
There's a death of Pans?
Like any personification of death, I have other appointments to get to.
These heroes are the Questers from FPM. The Questers from FPM is a serial created by Amy Bowen. Available exclusively in episodes of Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Starting with episodes 100 and 106. Subscribe at www.jackmangan.com.
So I'm sure most of you have heard of Anansi, or Coyote, or even both of them. Tricksters, you know what I mean? Anthropomorphic representations of their specific culture's fears made manifest through oral storytelling traditions. Right? Are you with me? Well, what you might not have known, and what isn't in any of the textbooks, is that Coyote and Anansi actually met up and formed a partnership in Toronto, Canada. What happened next? Only the end of the world. Again. Watch for Lost Gods, a new dark urban fantasy by Drew Beatty, the author of White Trashland, coming in the fall of 2008. For more information, visit www.lostgods.ca or www.drewbeatty.com. Remember, they'll only stay lost if you don't find them.
Well, you touched on something else that elicits a visceral reaction in me, and it's something I sort of have watched you build up to, and when you started saying it in interviews is about the time that I started saying it to myself and saying it to other people. And it's the thing with my audio drama, codenamed Starkeeper, that I wanted to make sure that I got it all done before I released it. And you started saying in the interviews recently, you know, you did the full recording of Contagious so you don't have to miss a week.
Right.
And I see podcast authors who run into, and I saw this first with my fellow audio drama creators, where in the past, like, they would put a lot of effort into a 30-minute audio drama chapter or episode, and then they would spend 6 months working on the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this with podcast authors. They get these delays because either they haven't recorded the whole thing, or they're waiting on lines for somebody. Or, you know, they take each thing and produce it one at a time, one at a time, one at a time. And so, you know, I was just in such agreement with you. I don't know how to put it any more strongly. When you said, get it all done first, it really struck a chord with me when you said that.
And it's, and that's advice I came to that was hard. It was hard earned. I had to learn that for myself when I was doing Nocturnal.
Because
there were other people out there writing as they went, and it wasn't until I did it that I realized it's just a horrible mistake. I don't care who's done it well. I don't care that Murr put out Heaven and Hell and all those books, and they were great, and she was writing it as she went. Mm-hmm. Or that Seth Harwood's doing it now with Young Junius. Just don't do it. It's a gigantic mistake. Finish your book. Edit. Get your book done. Record the whole book. Have it. You don't have to slice it up for episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at least have it down on wax. You know, get it in the computer. So that when it comes time to, maybe you just record per chapter,
mm-hmm.
and then you can use each chapter file. Like, this chapter's 5 minutes, this is 10, I'll put them together in a 15-minute episode. But that doing that gets you back to the first lesson, which was consistency. You got to be consistent in your weekly podcast if you want to be successful and build an audience. So if you've got your one book, you finish it, you record the whole thing, then you start podcasting. The other thing that does for you is it lets you take the experience you've developed writing and write your second book or write whatever it is you're going to put out so that when you finish that first book after 20, 25 episodes, you don't stop. You roll right into the next property and you keep cranking it out.
Right.
So no matter what, anybody listening to this, no matter what the temptation is to keep it going, or you think you've got your schedule down cold or nothing's changed in your life in 60 years and you know every Saturday you've got 8 hours without fail, four episodes in, that will change. That will go wrong, and you will go 3 or 4 weeks without putting out an episode, and you will lose your whole audience.
Yeah.
It's just what's going to happen.
Right. And people lose track of where you left off sometimes, and you know you don't want to go back and listen to the last episode. But you know, you've been a pretty effective guinea pig, I think, for all this stuff, and God bless you for doing it. But I don't want to, you know, dredge up a lot of stuff, but you know, if you're out there and you're that podcast novelist, and like you said, you think you got your schedule down and you think you can do it, you never know when your father-in-law is going to go in the hospital, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
You never know when your dog of 15 years is gonna die.
Well, that's what I ran into. I'm like, I have no kids. I was writing, you know, I'm writing full-time now. I have no kids. My wife has her schedule. I was looking at this going, that's a piece of cake, you know? It's going to be no problem. And then blammo, all the stuff you mentioned occurred, and the older you get, the more that stuff happens. You know, friends start to drop off, family starts to drop off. There's always something going on. So the thing is, if you take your time to finish the book and get it done right, when you have it all done, the book's done and it's all recorded, all these crazy things can pop up in your life, and you can manage those and still get your content out every week. Because it's, you got to get to the point where you've got 1,000 to 2,000 fans who will go out and buy your books when they come out. In order to be successful in the print game, you got to get to be able to move the needle.
Mm-hmm. So, let's lay podcasting aside. When you're looking at, you've got this book finished. Now, I will say that podcasting your novel, good idea. Either way, you know, that's neither here nor there. But if you think there's some people out there, they finish their book and they don't know how good it is, and they think, well, should I submit it to Tor, or should I look for an agent, or should I maybe look at Dragon Moon Press? You know, this really isn't all that good. Maybe I should go small. What advice do you have for that person besides, you know, podcast the novel if they want to make, like my case, I'd like to podcast it and start submitting it at the same time.
Right.
You know, my opinion is, aim high because you never know if you might have a hit on your hands.
Well, I think that it's my opinion that you start podcasting it because you want to start developing the audience and developing your connection with that audience and developing people who are going to go out and promote for you when your book finally comes out. Because you could get lucky and your book could be out in a year. You could get unlucky and your book will be out in 10 years. You don't want to wait 10 years to develop that audience.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, as far as going out and looking for agents and publishers, you know, that's something that you have to do at the same time. My advice, and this, it won't rub people the wrong way, but people be like, I don't want to do that. I would say, don't bother. Don't bother for 3 years. Keep writing, developing your craft, keep podcasting, building an audience. Because the thing is, it's the audience that's going to pay off for you in the long run. If you spend 4 hours a week banging away on agents and editors and publishers, and you don't get anything out of that, that's 4 hours a week you could have spent building up an audience.
Right.
And after your podcast is out and you're rolling, there are now a growing number of people you can talk to. Like you got a podcast out. If you want to aim big, you know, find the agents who are representing other podcast authors, talk to them, see if they're interested in your work. You know, you got to play the game I played for 15 years. Go to conventions. Find people who have authors that are banging away on social media, that have a very active website, that are out there trying to push themselves online so that when you go to those publishers and those editors, they understand where you're coming from. Oh, you're another Stephanie Myers. I see you're trying to use your website to build up an audience. Okay, we'll take a look. You know, you've got to find people who are representing authors who are doing things similar to what you are doing. That'll cut down the time. That'll at least get you the fair shake. And that's always been my goal. I just want someone to read it and give it a fair shake.
Right.
If they say no, no problem. But as long as I got a chance, the problem is, you know, getting that chance.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do those, you know, and don't think that, I mean, you can put it out with a Dragon Moon or a smaller publisher if you want to, because this isn't going to be your only book.
Right.
If you just want to do the one book, then yeah, put it out with Dragon Moon because it's your hobby. You're not trying to do this for a living. Mm-hmm. Eventually the books may pick up steam. But you know, if you podcast it, we're finding you're not compromising any rights. So you can just podcast book after book after book. And then as you build an audience or you find an agent or an editor who likes you, you can go out and get in front of them. The other thing to keep in mind is this is a really crappy time to be a new writer and trying to get in front of agents and editors. The industry is consolidating. Bookstores are closing. Orders are down. You know, it's, again, if you want to spend your valuable time pursuing that area of the game, you're up against even bigger hurdles than you were before. And before, the hurdles were basically insurmountable.
Right.
So now you're looking at smashing up against the windmill repeatedly. And that's all time you could be spent promoting online. I mean, it's just flat out, it's time you spend promoting online. And so I'm of the opinion, podcast 3 full books, spend 3 years doing this, start to gauge your audience, and then, you know, wait till the agents and the publishers start to ping you. That's the most time effective thing that you could do. Because if you want to go after agents and editors, there's far better resources than me. A lot of people have books on how to do that. They've got classes, they've got methods, you know, go find the people who make their living telling you how to do that.
Mm-hmm. And with that bad economy, everybody loves free stuff. So when you provide free stuff for them, they'll consume it.
The news sucks, but the news is that, you know, the J.K. Rowlings of the world, well, she doesn't count. She goes back 15 years now, but like the 70 Myers of the world, those are freak occurrences. And the Stephen Kings and the Anne Rices and the Dean Koontzes and the Joe Lansdales, those guys all earned their wings 25 years ago when there wasn't an internet, when there wasn't video games, when there wasn't multiplexes, when there wasn't 500 channels online. it was a completely different world. That was the world where you could put out 3 or 4 novels and be midlist before you broke open with something.
Right.
You could totally change your genre in the middle of your career and try something new. Those days are completely and utterly over with. They're just not here anymore. People don't have that patience for you. So, you know, trying to do things the way that they've been done in the past, buyer beware if that's the path you want to take. I don't think those things work. Granted, somebody in your listening audience will completely prove me wrong, but they will be in the vast minority and not in the majority. So finding the new ways in the new economy to get noticed and make it, you have to prove to publishers, like, I can sell books. I don't need you to sell books, but it'd be great if I had you because we could sell more together. That's right. What you have to get to.
And something I thought of as you were saying this was that, basically another question, do you think you can harm your own, you know, your own rights to your own material for audio if, say, you haven't finished podcasting that novel and your novel does get picked up and, you know, you had the ability to say, look at what I've built, let's do it together. Someone who hasn't built that audience doesn't have that audience to fall back on, and so maybe the publisher would look at them and say, you know, no, you don't get to podcast your own book.
Well, that's the business side that every author has to decide for himself or for herself. And you have to play that by ear and use common sense. Okay, mm-hmm. So if you're sitting there podcasting, you're in episode 6, and Dragon Moon Press shows up and says, want to put out the book, why don't you stop podcasting? We'll have the book out in a year and a half. You can start podcasting it again there. That's one decision, one scenario in which you have to make. On the other hand, if Scrivener shows up or Atria shows up and says, you're going to be our premier author in summer of 2010, stop your podcast entirely, we don't want it, here's a big signing bonus, mm-hmm. you know, that's another decision.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things. I wouldn't even worry about it until it happens. Each opportunity that comes up, you have to evaluate it on your own merits.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been, say you've been boing, then all of a sudden you've got 20,000 people listening every week and your website's going insane and Dragon Moon says, we want you to just shut down for a year and a half. You might say, no, I don't think so. If you've got 8 listeners, but one of them happened to be the publisher at Atria and he thinks you're the next big thing and says, stop your podcast, then yeah, I mean, then you pay more attention to that. So just, you know, play it by ear.
Right. Okay, I have two final questions. One about you as a writer, one about you as a person.
Okay.
First of all, who are the authors that contributed to who you are as a writer? And I can think of three, which would be Stephen King, Dean Koontz, and Michael Crichton.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably the three biggies. Who else contributed to that and how?
You know, Dean Koontz, not so much. I like Dean Koontz, but I just can't think of anything when I was reading Dean Koontz to say, oh man, I want to do something like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, oh, what a cool technique, or what a cool move. You know, I compare everything back to sports analogies. And when you watch, like I used to wrestle in high school and college, and when I would watch a wrestler and see him do something, like, oh, I can see that. I want to be able to do that right there. I can see where that works.
Mm-hmm.
I never had that reaction with Dean Koontz, although I just love his stories. But with King, you know, the more I studied up on writing, I would see his techniques and start to analyze, break down how he introduced elements, and I would just get all geeky and fired up about the actual nuts and bolts side of things. I'm like, oh, I can see why I cared about this character. Look how he introduces all big characters in just one paragraph, and how he does this. He does A, B, and C every time, and it's invisible unless you study it, like those things. Crichton, for his way to completely take bullshit science and make you think you were reading something that actually happened. Crichton was the Mac Daddy at that, and nobody's ever been as good. You know, you constantly talk to people who are barely educated, and they go, oh, yeah, we can clone dinosaurs. Oh, yeah, that's, you know, and you're like, dude, no, he made all that shit up. I mean, just, but he did it in such a way that you bought into it 100%.
Oh,
you
yeah,
bought in,
absolutely.
And you were excited about buying it. You're like, this is awesome. So Crichton.
Where are those mosquitoes?
Yeah, the DNA of mosquitoes in amber. You're like, wow, no, it's not going to happen. So he was the master at that, and I've taken a lot of elements from that. The other ones, I guess, would be Lincoln Child from the Relic book, and taken a few things from the way they did that, although they're very much contemporaries of Michael Crichton. But I think the other one would be George R.R. Martin, the fantasy author.
Yeah.
Because he'll whack anybody at any time.
Yeah.
He's just absolutely merciless. And I don't enjoy his books so much as I read them with a total sense of dread.
Yeah.
I turn every page going, oh, come on, George, don't kill this guy. Don't kill this guy. And he does.
Yeah.
And he puts his characters through the ringer. And by the time you get done with one of his books, I'm friggin' exhausted when I finish up with one of his books. I'm just like, why am I reading this? I'm so upset. Why am I reading this? So he's the other biggie. I mean, cause you know, if you can get that kind of emotional response out of people, and if they finish your book and immediately go put your next book in their Amazon wish list, cause it isn't going to be out for another 8 months, you know, that's, you're doing something right with those. So those would be the big three.
Okay. Interesting that you mentioned Martin. That's some came out of left field a little for me, but that's really cool. Now you've shown yourself to be a tireless promoter with unending passion and a pretty steady work ethic. I mean, if you can hammer out, you know, your moved up publication date sequel, and you can work on that in a hospital waiting room, I'm pretty sure you can work through almost anything.
Yep.
How did your upbringing and your past contribute to those qualities?
Well, you know, it's the general Midwestern upbringing, I guess, which is when you tell people you're going to do something, you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the example I guess I would use for that is moving to California has been such a culture shock for me, because in Michigan, where I'm from, if you tell somebody you're going to be at the bar at 8, you're there at 7:45, even if you lost a leg on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're like, you tie that sucker off, you borrow a blowtorch, you cauterize it, and then you get to the bar, and then you say, you know what, I'm not feeling so good, I think I'm going to go to the hospital. You go where you say you're going to go. And then in California, it's been different, because you'll be at the bar at 8:15, and somebody will call and go, yeah, I'm not going to make it, sorry about that. And it's not like an insult or anything in California, it's just, it's a different way people roll. So I don't know, maybe the Midwestern upbringing is a big part of it. And like when I told the publisher I was going to get this book done by the deadline, and then I have an obligation to my fans that I'm not, you know, I am not going to phone in a book ever. Whatever it takes, it's going to be, you're going to get your money's worth. And when I stop giving people their money's worth with the books, that's when it's time for me to get out of the game. So those are two of the big things. And then it's just, you know, I think the athletic background has a lot to do with it too, because that's another realm in which you're taught that, you know, pain is temporary and there are people relying on you to get into that lineup. And if it's wrestling, you go get your 6 points. If it's football, you're at least there on the practice squad so the starters can be ready for the game. There's no excuses. And I probably carry that too far. Everyone in the world would have completely understood if I had taken a break for contagious, been like, I can't do this right now, but it's just wired into the DNA. I'm like, I got to find a way to get this done. So, I mean, it's sort of good and it's sort of bad. It can be construed a couple different ways, but largely it's that. And then having been around this earth long enough to know that opportunities like this come around once and once only, and if you miss it, you will be spending the rest of your life going, gosh, I should have paid more attention to that. I really could have done something with that. And having had those feelings before with this opportunity with a big publisher behind me and being able to put out hardcover books and focus on it full time, you know, I'll die before I start phoning things in and blow my opportunity. I mean, when I get done with this, in another year, 2 years, if Crown's gone through the 5 books and they haven't made their money back and things haven't worked out, and I got to go back to the regular working world, I'll be able to go back with my head held high and go, you know, I just wasn't good enough. That's right. Why it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I'm not a good enough writer. People didn't like my stuff because I sure as hell had my chance and I did everything in my power to make it happen. I just wasn't good enough. And that will be no problem for me. What I will have a problem with is in 10 years if I go, I think I was good enough. I think I was good enough to be the next Stephen King, but I didn't work hard enough, and now the opportunity is gone. The latter of those two things would haunt me forever. The former would be like, hey, I had my shot. That's all you can ask for in life is you get your shot.
Yeah. Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming on here. This has really been a whirlwind. It's gone faster, I think, than I thought. I really, really have looked forward to this for a long time. So, again, thank you very much for being on here.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And you can go to scottsigler.com for all the updates on Scott's current work. And we look forward to whatever else you put out next.
All right, man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay, that is all I have with Scott Sigler. It was a real pleasure having him on. It was something I really looked forward to for a long, long time, a couple years at least. So it was a long time coming. Don't know who I want to interview next, but I'll think about it. I'll probably have Pip on one of these days, you know, just for fun. But I don't know what I'm going to do next. Probably go to Star Wars Second Strike. That's probably the next thing. Not sure what to do with the interview portion, but I'll probably just release it and then interview Nathan in one shot afterward. So that is it, and we will see you next time.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Indiana Jim, a production of Visionary Creative Works. Visit podcast.indianajim.net and leave comments on the blog. Send in your emails and audio feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. I'm Dr. John Small. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.